yesterday's evening. It is my great pleasure to chair the session on human resources and quality culture. My name is Anna Borowska and I'm the Civil Service Director at Statistics Poland. My job is to assure proper human and financial resources, and also I am responsible for good functioning of our office. Generally speaking, organizational culture is a collaborative process of creating shared awareness and understanding. Furthermore, the culture of the organization should always be learning and developing. Thus, the quality culture is a set of values, traditions, procedures, and attitudes accepted by the institution's members, which create the environment to follow permanent quality improvements. We are all aware that it would not be possible without our employees, who are the most valuable asset of our statistical institutes. Hence, it is my pleasure to start our session and give the floor to the speakers, who will help us understand some key learnings on implementing specific programs on enhancing the understanding and nurturing of quality culture in the NSIs. Let me inform you that the discussion and questions will be taken at the end of the session. So let's start. The first presentation is on capabilities, improving the quality of statistical capacity development by Stephen Whale from UNIC. Stephen has worked in official statistics for 27 years in the UK Office for National Statistics, Eurostat, OECD, and for the last 12 years, the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe, UNIC. He has worked in areas such as business surveys, business registers, methodology, training and modernization on official statistics, and currently he is responsible for coordinating UNIC capacity development activities, as well as leading UNIC work on various new and emerging topics. So Steve, the floor is yours.
So thank you, Anna, and good morning, everybody. So I'm going to talk a little bit about improving the quality of statistical capacity development and try to link that more to mainstream quality topics as I go along. But first, a bit of context. So developing capacities and capabilities in statistical organizations is becoming more important for all countries. We have a number of new challenges, new data sources, new demands for outputs, and particularly something called the Sustainable Development Goals. Here, there is a requirement to produce data for a set of 232 indicators. But that's not just 232 numbers, because each of those indicators has a detailed breakdown by various dimensions, like geography, age, sex, etc. So that's thousands of data points for each indicator. And at the moment, no country can provide more than two-thirds of the data needed. So many different challenges that are really driving the need to develop the way that we produce official statistics. So what has this got to do with quality? Well, quality is all about meeting user needs. And in capacity development, the beneficiaries are the most important users, the organizations whose capacities and capabilities will be developed. And if we want to improve the quality of capacity development activities, then we need to understand the users, the beneficiaries, and what exactly they need. Now, in UNECE, we've been a provider of capacity development activities for many years, organizing various training workshops and other events to try to bring countries together, to share experiences, to take experts to countries to help develop specific capacities and capabilities. But we decided that because of all the challenges, we need to think about a new strategy, a new way of doing things, try to be more efficient and more effective. So we have a new strategy which is all about modernizing our capacity development work. And this is based on a set of principles, the first of which is that capacity development must be demand-driven. So based on the needs of the beneficiaries, not the needs of the suppliers of the capacity development work. We have a number of priority areas which we're identifying through consultations with countries, and we have some new tools and methods which I'll talk about in a minute. But quite importantly, we're not really just focusing anymore on training of people. That's still important, but it's also important to think of the wider organizational context and building organizational capabilities. And I'm very happy to say that this new strategy was endorsed by the Conference of European Statisticians last week. This is a meeting of chief statisticians of about 60 countries that met in Geneva last week. So I've mentioned capabilities a few times, and probably I should give a definition. So I use a definition that comes from the IT industry, from something called the Open Group Architecture Framework. So a capability is an ability that an organization possesses, is the simplified version of the definition. And just like quality, capabilities can have several dimensions. So after talking to various people in statistical organizations who've been working in this area much longer than me, we came up with a set of seven dimensions for capabilities. So for an organization to have a capability, it needs to have technology, methods, information, which is data and metadata. It needs to have processes, standards and frameworks, and an institutional setting, which includes legal and policy considerations. And last but not least, right in the middle, people, and people that have the right skills. So a practical example, most statistical organizations need to have the capability to perform seasonal adjustment. And if you want to perform seasonal adjustment, you need people who understand it and can apply it. You need methodology, processes, some computers to run the programs on, so some technology, some standards, some information, so the data to adjust, and all of this in the context of the organizational setting, the national statistical legislation, etc. If we only address one or two of these dimensions, so for example, if we just train the people, or if we just provide some software, then we're not ensuring that the organization has the capability to do seasonal adjustment. We have to think in a holistic way and address all of the dimensions of capabilities. Now, just taking this one step further, another idea, also borrowed from the IT industry, is the related concept of maturity models. And here we can create a simple two-dimensional matrix where we put the dimensions of capabilities down the side and some levels of maturity across the top. Then we can use this sort of model to identify where an organization is today and where it wants to be at some point in the future. So in this example, the different lines show where an organization has assessed that it is at the moment against the seven dimensions of capabilities. And you can see that there is a target level which they're aiming for. In this case, methods are already at the target level, so they don't need to develop anything further in methodology. People, standards, and institutional settings are close. and most work is needed on technology and processes. And you'll notice as well the target isn't right at the highest level because just like quality, we're not aiming for perfection. We're aiming for good enough to meet user needs. So in this case, the focus would be on improving technology and processes. And as I've been developing these ideas, it also struck me that a similar approach could perhaps be applied to quality measurement. So instead of the dimensions of capabilities, we could have the dimensions of quality down the side. And we could use this maturity model concept to try to identify easily and visually which of the dimensions of quality need most attention for a particular input, process, or output. And then just to end, I have a number of references. I want to apologize, I didn't have time to write a paper about this, but these references between them have all of the information that would be needed to look into this in more detail. And I'd be happy to discuss this at some time during the conference or afterwards by email if anybody's interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen, very much. Now we can move to second presentation, ISOM, a metrics model for human resource organization to improve effectiveness and efficiency in official statistics by Sylvia Losko from ISTAT. Sylvia is the head of strategic plan division. She is ICT professional with 25 years of experience, specialized, among others, in portfolio and project management, governance, audit, strategic plan, ICT strategy and architecture, enterprise architecture, and purchasing service and infrastructure managing the procurement process. So Sylvia, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Han. Only a minute, I don't know. No? Do you can help me? This one. I have another presentation. This is the presentation of yesterday. Sorry. This is the presentation of the other session.
We've got technical problems. No presentation.
Perhaps it is downloading. Sorry, this is my presentation, the right one. Thank you, Anna, for your presentation. And as you say at the beginning of our session, quality does not only mean quality of a statistical product or statistical service, but is it connected to all the organization, also for the organization of human resources. In this presentation, I want to focalize this point and describe our experience in ISTAT, the Italian National Institute of Statistics. We begin with a deep transformation of our institute and in the modernization program. The beginning was 2016, the year in which was launched our modernization program. This modernization program focused the attention on statistical production and the use of register. But it has a deep impact in our organization and also in the method that we introduced to use resources, financial resources, but human resources in particular. In 2017, This program begins as a phase of startup, a structured startup. So we begin to fix some strategic point, strategic line of action, and also at operational level, we fixed some main objectives, some important results to achieve. Nowadays, in this year, we want to consolidate this approach to fix some point of attention and also to do a fine-tuning on the base of our experience in the of this year. What is the main step under an organizational point of view? The main step is the introduction of a new way to organize activities. PPM, Portfolio and Project Management. Also in the session of yesterday, we discussed with this new way to see statistical activity in an institute, a public institute. All activities are managed in ISTAT as a project, like a project, with a beginning phase, a closing phase, and a structured process of development according with business architecture. And in this session, I present you also the impact in the use of human resources that is a deep transformation for our institute. In the first time, we produced statistics in a traditional way as a survey, and also people are associated functionally in a division and in a unit in a fixed and defined mode. Now we transformed this method and introduced a management by project approach that it is also a cultural reference model to manage and planning and organize the activity and the human resources. The main element that conduces us to this method, to this introduction, is a first non-optimal use of human resources. So you know that if you use a functional organization, you have fixed unit, and you organize your resources by function as a in a fixed way. Nowadays, we have a transformation that uses resources dynamically, with a rapid change between an activity and another one. Also, the obsolescence of operational organization structure is a reason that conduces us to this transformation. And then the last one, the insufficient aptitude for managerialism. This is a problem in our institute because we have a lot of researchers, but we have not the attitude to manage, to control risk, to monitoring. And so this new framework helps us to introduce a culture in this sense. What is an initiative in ISTAT, in our institute? Initiatives is like a project, so it is an elementary unit to identify statistical activities, but also administrative procedures and technical services. Initiatives are connected to operative action and it is a line of activity. And he defined human and economic resources and the specific result and output that associated. They are a set of related and organized activity that require more complex programming and management than individual work tasks. And we classified as initiative current activities and project, both. So all activities is mapped in this model. And we group activities in portfolio. What is a portfolio? It is a collection of initiatives that all together are related to the achievement of goals, but these goals is connected to the action of our institute with our mission. Nowadays, we have 10 portfolio, and it is the distribution of initiatives inside our organization, mainly in two, the main department, the Department of Statistical Production and the Department of General Services that they have around 2,000 of initiatives in the plan now in this year. And so ISTAT adopted in this way a matrix model for management human resources. The matrix model is a combination between a project-based organization and a functional organization structures. In matrix organization, every employee, every resources report to many managers. So we have one or more project manager, depending on the number of a project they are involved. And then the functional manager, the chief of a division. And in this matrix model, typically it is usually adopted in large multi-project organization like our organization, where the employees are shared among a lot of activities, a lot of projects, and also functional units according with priorities, with a set of priorities. We have adopted a weak matrix, and so each initiatives are coordinated by a project manager who is in charge of the expected deliverables. The authority of the project manager changes according to his experience, so also his seniority. But in any case, he responds to a chief of a structure, organizative structure, of a chief of a division. And the model is a weak matrix in which we have a line of activity in my slide that is has a scope that is a specific output, and then use a team that is composed by experts from different organizational structure. So a resource can be assigned to an initiative either because of a belonging to an organizational unit or because the resource is an expert of a specific team. And in this case, the resource is negotiated between the different divisions. Yes, my last two minutes. And this phase of negotiation is a critical phase. So we are studying also the way to help our organization to conduct this phase. And then the list of all initiatives are public in our intranet, are present in our system that manage the information about planning, that is a PPMO system. And everyone can see where he's involved in like activity. This is an example of use of resources that is shared between some initiative with the specific time that he can dedicate to the initiative, 30% on initiative one, 30% on two, and so on. So we have activated a transversal collaboration between our division, our department, and this element help us in the startup phase because there is a significant percentage of workforce that was moved from a division to another one. So it was very important to maintain the possibility for resources belonging to different organization units to collaborate each other as a matrix model required. And it has allowed a faster exchange of skills between people in transition from one to another structure. Some issue and some opportunities to conclude. This matrix model will encourage knowledge sharing with different organization unit. It is a good method for this reason. It guarantees also an efficient use of human resources, as it allows managing workloads and keeping the resources used to the maximum of their capacity. But it has often happened that the resources commitment has been negotiated among executives without a proper involved of the resources themselves. This is a problem, a deep problem. And so to facilitate the sharing of resources, we are studying also as next step a new method to negotiate the collaboration involved different people in different phases. But what I can say to conclude my presentation is that the model's design is orientedly positively to develop synergies in our organization. And so emphasizing the importance of our synergies from a corporate strategy perspective is a first step to sustain innovation process and also for take attention to prospect needs. Thank you very much.
So thank you, Sylvia. Now we can move to the third presentation on sensibilization on quality at training center of INSE. By Xavier Helfenstein. Xavier works at the National Training Center of French NSI INSE. He is the head of training in charge with training routes and educational projects. He has been working at INSE for 20 years in several domains like census, surveys, diffusions, and training. So Xavier, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Anna, for introducing me. Dear colleagues, good morning. I will present you the sensibilization on quality at the training center of the French Institute, INSE. Let me begin my submission by presenting you rapidly the training center. Its name is CEFIL. Its missions are those you can see on the screen. And the main one, of course, is to conceive and to deploy trainings towards the newcomers in the institute and those who have been promoted. Therefore, the center is responsible for the initial training of employees and future middle managers of the institute, the French Institute. The three values carried by the education of the training center put the appropriation and the transmission of quality requirements at the heart of the educational device. Identity, which develops an attitude in compliance with the culture of the French Institute, and quality requirements are, of course, an integral part of this culture. Sharing, which allows trainees to learn by explaining to the others, and also to transform the diversity of the profiles of the trainees into an advantage rather than into an obstacle, a barrier. And involvement, which is the foundation of pedagogy for adults. When involving themselves, trainees manage the level of quality of the services they are producing during the projects I will present you. For each promotion, we have four promotions in a year. There is an educational route, and each educational route is based on projects. Training programs deployed towards trainees, all aim at developing the attitude of the statistician. What's that? For a trainee, it means to learn according to three axes. First, to acquire or to deepen a knowledge in statistics, demography, on softwares, on the culture of the French Institute. It also means to work according to an approach which respects rigor and objectivity. And third, it's very important for us, it means to be a colleague, to play collective, and when necessary, to take a step back. So quality requirement plays a major role in this attitude. And trainees have to apply it through different projects. Indeed, the center assumes that for employees or middle managers, the quality support is more induced by your daily behavior than by the knowledge of an academic subject. Adopting a project approach takes there all its interest. I will present you four projects that we are implementing. The first one is the project of concerted analysis of statistical tables, on which trainees work individually and collectively on the demography of territories from a set of statistical tables and graphs. This project teaches and it entails trainees to write in a clear, rigorous, and impartial way. Those are, of course, essential dimensions on quality. This project also formalizes collaborative working periods between trainees during the phase of the analysis for the rereading. They are working in small groups. Second project is the skill transmission project. Its goal is to develop self-help through tutoring and through sharing of knowledge. This project prepares trainees to an act of management. They act as tutors of other trainees or other colleagues, relying on the pedagogy lessons they have received. In transmission of knowledge, we find several elements of a quality approach. Of course, instruction of a demand, respect of deadlines and not timeliness of the activities of transmission, and organization and planning of relevant activities of transmissions. For instance, trainees organize entirely a career day in which they can present their former jobs for those who have been working at the institute before coming to the center. And they can also attend workshops of presentation of jobs existing in the institute. The third project, the statistical survey project, where groups of a dozen trainees realize entirely and collectively a real statistical survey for a real public stakeholder, from the initial phase of identifying needs to the final step of presenting the results to the partners. This project endows trainees of several reflexes in compliance with the quality approach. They have to mobilize and to organize all the skills of a team. Each group is a team project. They have to organize follow-up meetings to document their process, showing them the importance of the metadata. They have to respect the deadlines, to arbitrate under constraint, and so on, to control and to check collected data and to restitute the results in compliance with the statistical confidentiality. Last project is the project Co for communication and Co for collaboration. This project consists in making the trainees think about their place and their role in the institute. Regarding to the collaborative network they are taking part in, it allows to the trainees to approach the quality approach on its human and organizational dimensions. In fact, different sequences, different phases of this project are exercises of oral communication. And this project also allows to schematize, to learn them how to schematize and to summarize in a synthetical way. We ask them to represent the network of collaboration on a paperboard, as they want. Some make a list, others make a schema. This project also allows to deepen the knowledge of the processes in the institute and their network collaboration, and of course to know better the institute and their place in it, their role. In complement to those projects, more academic trainings are provided, and they are an opportunity to present the other aspects of quality. At the end of each training program, contributions provided in projects and training are repositioned according to the principles of the European Code of Practice. You can see there an example in one training program. For each principle, you can see trainings and projects that are concerned. For instance, the first principle, professional independence, trainees show this principle through presentation of the governance of the French statistical system, or through a presentation of the missions or the quality approach in the institute. Another example, the principle impartiality and objectivity, the survey project, and especially during the phase of the results analysis, and the project of concerted analysis of statistical tables show this principle. For the other principles, it's the same thing. The survey project in its globality shows the trainees the principle appropriate statistical procedures. And for the principle relevance, during the phase of identifying needs in the survey project, trainees have to wonder the relevance of their questions when they reword the partner request. Thank you for your attention. I finished.
Just some time. Thank you very much, Xavier. The next presentation is on matching pairs, agile, and pin the tail on the donkey, making quality management relevant to non-statistical staff by Olivia Wayman from Office for National Statistics in UK. Olivia is a researcher. She works in the quality assurance team within the census program, where she will be helping to quality assure the 2021 census estimates. She has also been involved in training staff across the program in quality management. So, Olivia, the floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for attending this session. So, my name's Olivia Wayman, and I'm from the Office for National Statistics. And my presentation today is about how we've been able to make quality management relevant to staff working in the census programme through the implementation of a training course which was created and run by myself and three others in the programme. So this just outlines what I'm going to be talking about today. So I'll start off by outlining why we identified a need for the course and the consequent aims of the course. And then I'll discuss how we developed the course to meet those aims. and how we made the course engaging for staff. And then I'll finish with a discussion on how successful we were in meeting our aims. So we identified a need to engage all staff working in the census programme in a culture of quality, because whilst many seemed to be aware of the corporate approach to quality, many were unsure of how this applied or related to them. And this was particularly true for those working in non-statistical professions, in part because much of the current corporate-wide training that we had available focused on ensuring statistical quality. We therefore aimed to create a course that would provide all staff with an understanding of what quality is, why quality is important, and how staff can be achieving quality outcomes in the programme, with a focus on showing how quality fits into everybody's role, and that quality is the responsibility of everybody, not just those working in the statistical and operational roles. In meeting these aims, it was firstly important that we used the ONS Quality Centre course as a guide to ensure that we aligned our teaching with corporate training. So this meant using existing frameworks to outline what quality is and why it is important. So for example, using the European Statistical System definition of quality as fitness for purpose, and explaining the legislative requirements for quality set out in the UK Statistics Authority Code of Practice, and why meeting these requirements is important. But it was also important that we incorporated census-specific guidance. So this meant using the quality dimensions provided by the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe, rather than the European Statistical System dimensions of quality, as a means for determining whether something is fit for purpose. So we placed these quality dimensions at the centre of our census quality management framework, which we extended to include the components of programme management, procurement, technology, and the target operating model, to ensure that the framework was made relevant to all staff working in the census programme. So this quality management framework sets out a life cycle of the processes for ensuring quality, which you can see here. So it sets out that firstly, quality targets should be set. Methods and processes then need to be designed, developed, and tested. There need to be checks in place to identify problems within processes, but there also need to be checks that what's been produced is accurate and what was expected. Finally, you need to evaluate and report on methods and processes so that lessons can be learned for next time and users are aware of any quality issues. So we stress that this life cycle is applicable on the programme level, so in the actual production of the census, but also within teams, and also on an individual level. So for an individual piece of work, following these stages will help to ensure quality in that product. We provided examples of the day-to-day activities that people working in each team do within each stage of the life cycle, to illustrate how staff can be achieving quality outcomes. To further illustrate this, we showed that quality sits at the heart of our project management approach. We showed that the tools and techniques used within Agile actually reflect the stages of the quality management framework and the life cycle. So for example, monthly show and tells that we use to demonstrate a working product to other teams provide a mechanism for quality assurance and a space to communicate with customers to ensure that what's being produced is fit for purpose. So this helped to illustrate that staff may already be doing quality, even if they don't realise that they're doing it. To ensure understanding of some of the key concepts, we used non-statistical examples that we knew everybody could relate to and would understand. So for example, we defined fitness for purpose as a pair of wellies on a rainy day, like today. So we showed that it would be great to have wellies that look nice, that maybe match your outfit, but that's no good if they're too small or they're too big or they have holes in them, because they're not meeting my requirement of keeping my feet dry on a day like today. So they're therefore not fit for purpose. We used a crisp analogy to define and highlight the differences between the UNECE definitions of quality control and quality assurance. So we showed that checking the colour of crisps as they're being produced is a form of quality control because it allows for the identification of errors in processes, such as crisps being left in the fryer too long and burning. We also showed that checking the flavour and tastes of crisps once they've been produced allows for the identification of any undetected errors that might have crept in along the way, and assurance that you're selling a bag of crisps that you know your customers will enjoy. So that's how we developed the course to meet our aims. We also used numerous methods to make the course content engaging, the first being use of quite fun and informal slides to make some of the heavier content more memorable. We introduced some of the key frameworks and definitions through activities. For example, we introduced the UNECE quality dimensions through a matching pairs game, which was competitive. And this was effective because it encouraged staff to seek full understanding of each dimension and to stay focused to win the competition. We made use of a quiz to reinforce the key learning points. This was created using Kahoot, which is a free internet resource which requires attendees to bring either a smartphone or a laptop to the course. We asked 7 multiple choice questions about the quality frameworks and definitions. And again, the competitive element was effective because it encouraged staff to really think about what they had learned, and it was useful in helping staff to remember the key learning points. But also this helped to highlight the trade-off between the dimensions of timeliness and accuracy, because the faster that questions were answered, the more points that were awarded. But by rushing to answer quickly, sometimes staff would choose the wrong answer because they hadn't read the options correctly. Our final activity gave staff a chance to apply what they'd learned about quality frameworks and definitions to what they actually do in their role. So throughout the course, we asked staff to write down on post-it notes examples of the activities that they do in their role that relate to quality. And then in this task, they were asked to pin them up on the quality donkey, which shows the quality management life cycle. So this gave staff a chance to discover for themselves that quality was already part of their work. So we measured our success through an evaluation survey, which staff were asked to complete on Kahoot at the end of the course. So analysis of the feedback from this showed that staff felt informed about what quality is, that they had an enthusiasm to learn even more about producing quality outcomes, that they understood the importance of quality, and that they knew how quality fits into their role. We also received good written and verbal feedback from those who had attended the course, and much of this centred on the fun content and the good delivery of the course. And since running the course, there's also been a noticeable increased awareness of quality and concern for producing quality outcomes across the programme, with greater discussion of quality in teams and better incorporation of quality assurance activities into plans. So I think this highlights that we were quite successful in meeting our aims of providing a course that would show, which would provide an understanding of what quality is, why it is important, and how to produce quality outcomes. And because of our success, we plan to continue running these quality courses, which will hopefully help to embed a culture of quality across the programme. But also the success of the course has informed the redevelopment of the ONS corporate course to become more relevant to a range of professions, which will hopefully help to embed a culture of quality across the entire organisation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Olivia. Now we can move to the next presentation on the new quality strategy in the modernized Italian National Statistical Institute by Giovanna Brancato from ISTAT. Giovanna has been working at ISTAT since 1996. Her background is statistics, especially in the quality area. Since 2010, she coordinates the ISTAT quality function. Currently, she is manager of the project on methods and tools for quality measurement and assessment. She is in charge of maintaining and updating ISTAT quality strategy, and she is the member of many international groups and task forces concerning quality. So, Giovanna, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Anna. Good morning. The need to update ISTAT quality policy comes from both international and internal drivers. On the one side, the European Statistics Code of Practice has been updated, including new elements concerning the new data sources, for example, and also the law has been a new law state reinforced the coordination role of national statistical institutes within the national statistical systems. Finally, an ongoing activity at European level is introducing a European statistical system, a common quality frameworks with additional quality management elements supporting the already existent tools such as the code of practice and the quality assurance framework. On the other side, ISTAT, a couple of years ago, as was very well anticipated by my colleague Silvia Losco, introduced a modernization program. Now I will just focus on other elements that are functional to this presentation. So the new elements is the shift from a survey-based statistical production to a register-based statistical production and the use of new sources, a new organization with the formalization of service level agreements putting together the requirements from the subject matter directorates towards the centralized function at the corporate level. These new activities also need a wider system for quality measurement and assessment. And finally, to respond to the European stimulus, we need also to reinforce quality of the national statistical system as a whole. In my presentation, I will only focus on some issues because this program has short-term objectives and long-term objectives. And also I want to underline that we want to capitalize from the past. We have a long tradition, so we need to also capitalize from what we have carried out so far. So before the modernization... Okay, there's something... So before the modernization, quality was defined along the single statistical business process. And quality assurance plan useful for preventing, monitoring, and evaluating errors were defined and documented. And also quality indicators at the process level were computed in order to monitor and assess the main sources of errors, such as coverage, no response, and measurement. In the last decade, a wide assessment program was carried out based on auditing and self-assessment of single statistical processes. In the new organization, the new data collection directory collects data from administrative sources, even more and more, and survey data, and performs also quality checks. And I invite you to also follow the speed talks that will be after this session with a colleague of mine talking about some quality activities on the use of administrative data. And in this new organization, also some standard quality indicators defined by the quality function at the centralized level have been, let's say, anticipated to this step and centralized, thus gaining efficiency and in the computation of these measures. Administrative sources and survey data are then integrated in the system of registers and surveys, and also new data sources are used in order to produce register-based statistics at the methodology and quality directorate. Here, there is the need of new quality indicators and measures more tailored for such an integrated system. And we are developing these measures. This approach requires interoperability between the systems developed in the two directorates. Generalizing what we have seen with respect to the data collection and quality measurements, we want we need also to update our measurement and assessment measures all over the system, but we still need to maintain the traditional documentation based on the single process, single statistical process, because this is functional for the production of standard quality reporting that was one of the first objectives of ISTAT, and in fact we increased the production and dissemination of such reports. However, this traditional approach has to be integrated with a different perspective. So considering the phases of the production process where we centralized the support, we introduce a new quality vision, and we call it the quality at a corporate level. And so for these phases, we look at quality both in terms of input and output of the data and process quality and quality of the service provided by the centralized units, such as also the methodological ones. I also mentioned our activities towards the national statistical system. In session 6, there will be another presentation more on this. We extended, we generalized the auditing approach to the statistical processes produced by the other national authorities. And to do this, we developed tailored tools for the other national authorities that are also usable for the other producers of the national statistical systems. And also we shared these tools and test the evaluation questionnaires on some processes. The program, the real program was launched this year, and it was supported by an extensive training on quality of the staff of the bodies in charge of producing statistics in Italy, ONAS and the other producers. So concluding, the new quality strategy is pretty ambitious and has short, mid and long term objectives. We had to set priorities, and so far we have started reinforcing the quality of the national statistical production and the European statistics produced by the ONAS. We have increased the quality information disseminated for the users and made it more accessible. We have centralized the computation of some quality indicators, and also we can rely on a solid quality framework for register-based and multi-source statistics, and we are on the way of making it operational. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Giovanna, very much. And now we've got last but not least presentation on Future, Engage, Deliver, Refreshing the UK Code of Practice for Statistics by Ed Humperson from UK Office for Statistics Regulation. Ed is the Director General for Regulation since January 2014. Before, he was a board member and executive leader for economic affairs at the National Audit Office, responsible for the overall strategic direction of National Audit Office's work on economic affairs. So Ed, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much for that introduction, and good morning, everyone. This whole session is about human resources and quality culture. I'm going to talk about the UK's new code of practice for statistics through the lens of human behaviour and culture. And I'm also going to talk about onions. You heard that correctly, onions. First of all, a quick word about us. I'm the head of the Office for Statistics Regulation. We regulate, oversee all of the UK's official statistics. Note in particular that we're responsible for the UK's Code of Practice for Statistics, which is in place since 2008, and I'm talking about the revision that we put in place earlier this year in 2018. So why did we do this? Why did we change the code of practice? Well, if you'd have been attending any of the sessions at this conference in the last couple of days, you'd have heard people talking about moving to a world of abundant data, moving to a world where there's increasing concerns about quality, and particularly in Konrad Pessendorfer's talk, this world of post-truth, of people who disengage from the world of evidence and facts. So I'm not going to dwell on these points, but these were the contextual factors that led us to say we've got to take our code of practice and move it to another level, because we think there's a really significant risk to public confidence in official statistics. But we also had another concern. We were worried that official statistics at their worst resembled one of these walled gardens. You know, when you go to a mansion or a palace, they often have these kind of beautiful walled gardens, and they're lovely places. There's beautiful plants in them, they're very well cared for, but they're closed off, and they're very elitist. They're not very open for public use, and we thought that statistics at their worst resembled this kind of closed world, not very engaged with the public, not very accessible to the public, and we were worried that our code, the original version of the code, might be reinforcing that walled garden. So we set about thinking about a code which would be all about public confidence in statistics, and also would address this risk of being a walled garden. We ended up with a code built on our philosophy with three pillars. A pillar of trustworthiness, which is about people, systems, and processes. A pillar of quality, robust data methods and statistics, and a pillar of value, statistics that serve the public. And what I'd like to do is explain where two of those three pillars came from, the trustworthiness pillar and the value pillar. And I'm going to do so by stripping back anything about statistics and take this down to a very, very human level, the basic nature of human exchanges of information of all kinds. So I'd like you to imagine for a moment that you are a subsistence farmer, a farmer who grows the food that you eat. You grow onions, that's what you grow. Imagine that. But you're kind of getting a bit bored of just eating onions. You know, it's a kind of not a very varied diet. You want to vary your diet. So what do? You've got onions, you want other things. You've got to trade, right? You've got to swap your onions for some other food. So what you do is, you know, there's a village nearby. You go to the village and you start to think, well, who can I give my onions to? And you encounter another farmer. Let's call this farmer Farmer A. And Farmer A offers turnips. Those apparently are turnips. Just to illustrate that I've got the power to find images on Google, those are some turnips. The thing about Farmer A, he's saying, I'll take your onions, but I'll give you my turnips. But you hear people say Farmer A is not very reliable. Sometimes he says he's giving you a bag full of 10 turnips and there's only 9. Sometimes he says the turnips are fresh and they're not. This is a farmer with a poor track record. This is a farmer who is not trustworthy. So you pass up the trade with Farmer A. You're not going to trade with someone who's not trustworthy. And you see a second farmer who's imaginatively called Farmer B, who also offers turnips. The thing about this farmer is good track record, very reliable, always fulfills his promises. But you don't just immediately say, well, here are my onions, give me your turnips. You actually have to go a second stage. You have to say, well, okay, I know you've got a good track record, but I'm going to actually look at the turnips you've got today. I'm going to smell them and prod them and touch them. I'm going to test their quality. Trustworthiness is not enough. If I'm going to take your turnips, I want to see their quality. So you're pretty ready now to do your trade. You've passed the trustworthiness test. You've passed the quality test. And then out of the corner of your eye, you see a third farmer who, as you might imagine, is called Farmer C. And Farmer C offers strawberries, beautiful, bright, colourful strawberries. And you remember, at the final moment, you remember that your objective is not to get onions. You're not out for for turnips, even. You're out to vary your diet. Well, that's what you want to do. You want to vary your diet. Your objective, your outcome, is varying your diet. Farmer C offers you value, offers something which is relevant to your needs, meets your objectives. And we think that this basic idea of how humans exchange anything, whether it's food or information or ideas, you start with thinking about trustworthiness, the nature of the counterparty, you then think about the quality, but then you have to test, is this meaningful, is this relevant to me? That's a really powerful way of thinking about public confidence in statistics. So that was the kind of basic idea. Then we started to look around for people who'd done more thinking about this than us, and we encountered this person. And I'm probably not going to be able to hear anybody who can raise that, or see anybody who can raise their hand. But if there is anybody who knows who this is, you could not make me happier than if you could say her name now. Does anybody know who this is? Anybody on the panel? No? Anybody willing to get? There's a prize if you can get this right. No? This is Honora O'Neill. She is, in my view, the greatest living British philosopher. Born in Belfast. And her particular thing is the philosophy of trust. And if you ever want to hear someone talk about trust brilliantly, look at her TED Talks. Absolutely fantastic. It was summarized actually by another person, Sir David Spiegelhalter. She talks about trustworthiness in the following way. Rather than aiming to build trust, the task should be to become trustworthy. This means demonstrating competence, honesty, and reliability. And this is the crucial bit. But you also have to provide usable evidence that allows others to check whether you are trustworthy. And that necessitates making yourself vulnerable to the other party. So we built our code, the first bit of our code, around this point about being trustworthy, providing usable evidence. And let me give just one example of what that means in practice. The first version of the code said, keep data confidential. Very simple. The new version of the code says, provide arrangements for data governance that allows the public to see that you're keeping data confidential. Provide usable evidence that allows others to check that you are trustworthy. And if you look at our code, the first pillar is all about providing usable evidence. We have a quality pillar. I'm not going to talk about that in the interests of time. But we do have a value pillar as well. And that comes from this place, which I'm sure many of you will know is the UN. When we started to think about value, we thought, who's done lots of work here? And we really liked a phrase in the UN Fundamental Principles of Official Statistics, which talks about statistics meeting the test of practical utility. We thought that was a really nice way, practical usefulness, not theoretical, but practical usefulness. And therefore, we built this pillar of the code around relevance, accessibility, clarity and insight, innovation, and of course, efficiency. Now, I've rattled through this. If you go to our website, you'll see the full code of practice with all of these pillars unpacked into a series of principles and practices. It hasn't really been time to kind of go through them all in detail. What I wanted to give you, though, was a flavor of when we thought about our new code of practice, we thought about humans, how humans interact, what supports confidence between humans, and what might help open up the process of statistics to public accessibility. Final word, in doing all of this, we were very keenly aware of having two audiences. There's an audience of beneficiaries, that is the people who use statistics, the citizens who rely on statistics to understand the world, to form their judgments. They kind of benefit from the code. They might not even know it exists, frankly, but they benefit from it because they're using statistics in which they can have confidence. The people who use the code, though, are people like most of us in this room, day-to-day practitioners in the production, oversight, dissemination of statistics. And we think it was really important that, that the code was meaningful and useful for them. I think that we've achieved this balance between producing a code which serves the public, serves the beneficiaries, whilst being meaningful and useful for the people who use it on a day-to-day basis. And one of the ways in which I feel we're seeing that is a really interesting side effect, and this is my last word. This interesting side effect of doing this code in this way has been lots of organizations who don't produce official statistics, they may produce research or analysis or publish economic forecasts, have started to come to us to say, these pillars, trustworthiness, quality, and value, they kind of have a universality to them. They're not just about statistics. And they're starting to adopt the code on a voluntary basis. That says to us that thinking in this way about a code of practice is something which intermediates between audiences, between humans who are exchanging information, is a really powerful way to think. And we're quite excited to see organizations inside the public sector and actually in the private sector also starting to say they are going to use the pillars of trustworthiness, quality, and value as well. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ed. We listened to all speakers. Thank you very much once again. And now we have time for discussion, remarks, questions. Who would like to take the floor for the first? And I would like to ask you kindly, please introduce yourself shortly. Okay, so at the top. So we need to go and take micro.
Thank you. My question is for Ed, actually. Fiona Reardon from the Centre for Statistics Office in Ireland. You spoke there about giving trust to, or giving assurance to your customers, evidence. My words now aren't as full of clarity as yours are, but how do you give your customers or your beneficiaries that trust that you spoke about, you know, that you're proving it to them? Thanks.
So I think the things which underpin the trustworthiness pillar will be very, very familiar to practitioners in statistics. Very, very closely aligned to the European Code of Practice as well. There are a set of things which are organizational environment factors, things like commitments to orderly publication, pre-announcing when a statistic will be released and then sticking to that date, being clear who has the final sign-off, putting the name of the statistician, not the name of a press officer, the name of the statistician on the front page of the statistical release, describing the governance around data confidentiality. I think the key thing, though, whilst all of those things are probably quite familiar, what we think is really important is that we've framed them in this notion of providing usable evidence to the public to allow them to test for this trustworthiness. So it's rather than just being a bland list of organizational requirements, they have a real purpose, that what the producer is trying to achieve is providing evidence to others to allow them to be confident. So I think, in a sense, there's no real kind of dazzling magic in the detailed practices within that pillar. What I think is really important is the kind of the mindset of providing usable evidence to allow the public to check. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that was my kind of reflection when I heard your comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ed. I think that we've got another question, please.
Thank you. Jolanta Szutkowska, Statistics Poland. First of all, I would like to thank you for organization of this session and presenting such interesting topics. I'm interested in the opinion of our speaker on following issues. Do you think that your new strategy versus development capacity of organization bring you to explore potential of human resources optimally? If yes, why? And relevant issue, what skills should statisticians have in the face of statistics of new era when we meet with data revolution, digitalization, access to different types of data, and development, rapid development of artificial intelligence? Do you think that your training programs develop those type of skills? Thank you.
So thank you for a very interesting question. Yes, that's certainly part of the driver for what I was talking about, the need to have these new skills, these new capabilities within our statistical organizations. We don't fully know what all of these skills and capabilities are yet, and we probably never will, because they're changing rapidly. I think it's key to focus for statisticians, though, on the basic ideas around data literacy, being able to understand data, to understand the context, the background, the quality, etc., of data. And if we have statisticians who can increase their data literacy in that way, and then combine that with technical skills, which are becoming increasingly important in the areas of analysis and processing, then I think we'll be going some way to meeting the current needs. But we have to always keep watching on what the needs will be in the future because of the lead time involved in training. And I'll just mention in this context some very interesting work from a year or two ago that actually Anna, our chair, was involved in. And this was about, maybe it's not so relevant to think about individuals having all of these skills, but to think about putting the right people together so that you have a team with the relevant skills that you need for a particular task in the future. And I think particularly in statistical organizations where we might have trouble competing in the labor market for the people that have the best skills in data analysis or big data, artificial intelligence, etc., it is easier to find combinations of people that have the different parts of the skills that are needed and bring them together as a team. Thank you.
Okay. I completely agree with Stephen. The young public is a millennial public. They were born with the internet, with digitalized data, and so on. And they are used to seeing their and to using their in their life. For me, the solution is the sharing of experience, the sharing of skills, and I completely agree with the fact that it's more easier nowadays to combine all all the skills of different persons by internet. For example, even if the meetings are most important, the workshops, I mean. So for me, the solution, the digitalization is not an issue for me, because if there is, the solution is the sharing of knowledge and the transmission of skills.
Yes, if I can add some consideration. In my presentation, I speak about a matrix model. It is a way to build a team with different competencies, as Steve is saying. And competence are not only technical and statistical competence, but for example, communication is very, very important in this period, but also IT competence. And so, all the competence that can be oriented on digitalization our processes, but also leadership, team building, and problem solving are new matter for a statistician, but are very, very important because it is the new way to conduct a team of work and also to do network. Nowadays, all our activities are conducted with the support of a network of people that can operate in the same organization or at international level, it's the same. But they go in a group with their competence, with their capability, but ability and competence. Competence and ability, so also communication, leadership, team building, problem solving, and so on, and obviously also technical competence.
And just to pick up one part of the question, and thank you very much for the question. The questioner mentioned artificial intelligence briefly, and I just wanted to refer to a development in the UK where some official statistics outputs are being created through a tool called the Reproducible Analytical Pipeline, which is basically a machine that creates the statistical bulletin as opposed to a human being typing the words out. And for the avoidance of doubt, I think that's a fantastic development, because one of the things which might be impeding the public value of statistics is that the statisticians who do the work are kind of resource constrained, and the effort which goes into producing the basics of a statistical output kind of erodes the time available for thinking about insight, for thinking about dissemination, for thinking about engagement. So the machine, the tool, this analytical pipeline that can automate some of the more basic elements of it, I think is really good, because I think it frees up time for the more kind of higher value components that I was talking about as under the value pillar. So I think AI is actually, it's coming, and I think we should embrace it.
Thank you. I didn't mention this in my presentation because it represented less novelty in the quality framework. But the ISTAT centralized quality function is also in charge of quality training. And we have supported the methodological, of course my perspective is more on methods and methodological view. We have supported our colleagues with an articulated training program for non-statisticians and for statisticians. And recently, this program has been updated, of course. So we have already, since a couple of years, even more, introduced topics more oriented to the use of administrative data and the quality of the use of administrative data. And we are continuously trying to keep the pace of the time Of course, before you can teach some methods, they had to reach a given status of solidity. And so in some areas, we still are a little bit far from being able to spread competencies, methodological competencies.
Thank you very much. Do we've got another question? Go ahead, please.
So, hello everybody, my name is Magdalena Six. I come from Statistics Austria. So first of all, thanks for all the speakers for the very interesting presentation. My question goes out specifically to Ed Hanversen. You were presenting not only this new structure of your new code, but you have also disseminated it, you have promoted it, and from a view of Eurostat, we are in the middle of producing our revision of the new code. It's finished, but we have not really disseminated it too much at the moment. So are there any recommendations? How did you do it? And what can we learn from it? And what can we do on a national statistical level? That would be interesting. Thank you.
I think that I think you should disseminate it. I think it's a. I think these codes are, of course, they are at one level kind of a set of specific expectations on producers of statistics. But I also think they have this really powerful kind of showcase. They are the European code, and I think our code too, really succinct and simple kind of attestations as to what we believe in as an official statistics community to be important. And I think that's a really powerful showcase, particularly in a world where, as we were hearing throughout this this conference, where we sometimes worry about kind of the risk of obsolescence in official statistics. I think codes are really powerful kind of distillations of what we believe in. So I think it should be done. That's the reason to do it. How to do it? Well, in terms of our engagement, we actually did three waves of engagement. We did a first wave where we talked to lots of people and said, what do you think of the current code? And that involved 30 or 40 different workshops and so on. Then we did a wave where we said, this is kind of what we're thinking of doing. What do you think about it? A kind of pre-consultation phase. And then we did a consultation phase where we said, this is a draft code. What do you think of it? And just to give you an indication of that, we did about 40 workshops in the consultation phase alone. And we worked out that we traversed about 4,000 miles across the UK at various events. And UK is not a big country, so to rack up 4,000 miles, you've got to be traveling around a lot. And what we learned from that is a huge amount. In fact, the way that I tell that story emerged from the kind of iterative process of talking to people. It didn't arrive kind of perfectly done. It was feedback and comments and insights from people. So I think it's really enriching. I think it's a showcase. The other thing I think is that the job does not end on the day where you say, here's a new code. In fact, actually, it starts then, because what you want is for the code to be embedded with the series of audiences that you have, and that's statistical practitioners. That's policymakers, really important audience, policymakers who use the statistics. It's the media, it's politicians. I'd really encourage a very, very engagement-led approach. Just as we encourage statisticians to think about user engagement, I think people responsible for codes should think in those terms.
Thank you. Do we've got questions? I've got one to Olivia. You mentioned in your paper that the training program has received a high level of feedback. However, you acknowledge that those who agreed that the course was relevant to their role, 66% strongly agreed, and 34% somewhat agreed. And this was identified as a space for improvement. Can you tell us what, or describe concrete examples, what can be provided for improvement?
Yeah, so I think we identified this as a space for improvement because not 100% of people agreed, and it's quite important to understand that this feedback was generated quite early on when we started doing the courses, and since then we've developed the course to provide more examples of to each team and make it more relevant to different roles. So in particular, we use the final activity that I was talking about. You know, each team kind of gave specific examples of the things that they do in their role that relate to quality, and then we incorporated those and kind of improved the course to take on board some of those examples and show other people what others do in their role that relate to quality.
Okay, thank you very much, Olivia. So I think that we can finish our session, so let me sum up shortly. So a common theme that ran through each of the presenters' talks was governance, mainly by project approach over the production of official statistics, but not only. You mentioned also this administrative part of NSIs. And it was to ensure the quality, integrity, and reliability of statistics and increase the trust in national statistics by the general public. So once again, thank you very much to all of you and the audience. Thank you.